Good evening and welcome to The Late Debate. I'm Katie Hannan and joining me in studio tonight I have Jim O'Callaghan, Fianna Fáil TD for Dublin Bay South and party spokesperson on justice and equality, Matt Carthy, Sinn Féin TD for Cavan Monaghan, Pippa Hackett, Green Party spokesperson on agriculture, broadcaster and journalist Lise Hand and Dr Kevin Cunningham, politics lecturer at TU Dublin. We want to hear from you, so please do get in touch. You can text us on 51551, email latedebate@rte.ie or tweet to @latedebaterte. #RTELD. Now we turn first to that big story today, of course, the latest developments in relation to COVID-19 or the coronavirus. Health Minister Simon Harris explained the new guidelines for those who have returned from affected regions this evening.
So up until now, the advice had been if you've been in mainland China in the last 14 days and you were showing symptoms, to self-isolate and contact your GP over the phone. We're adding to that list now Japan, Singapore, Hong Kong, South Korea, Iran, and the four regions in northern Italy that have been identified by the Italian authorities. If you have been in those areas in the last 14 days and are showing symptoms, and these are symptoms that are cold or flu-like, you should contact your GP by phone or indeed contact HSE Live.
That's Simon Harris there. Now I'm joined on the line by Deputy Chief Medical Officer Dr. Ronan Glenn, who is a member of the National Public Health Emergency Group, which met for several hours this evening. Dr. Glenn, thanks for taking our call.
Thanks, Kelly.
The big news out of that meeting this evening was that advice to cancel the Ireland-Italy Six Nations clash in next month. The RFU obviously have taken some issue with that. They're saying they want an urgent meeting, and I see that the minister is tweeting this evening that he's happy to meet with the RFU in the morning. Could you just explain to us what the logic behind that decision?
Sure. So clearly this is a situation that's evolving rapidly, both internationally, globally, and then obviously in Europe as well. The decision taken today in relation to, or the recommendation that's been made in relation to the match, was based first and foremost on our understanding of the situation as it's evolving in Italy. And I suppose it's clear, what is clear at this point is that that situation is evolving rapidly and there's a considerable amount of uncertainty about the number of cases there and where the situation is likely to go over the coming days. Clearly, if the match was to go ahead, a significant number of people would have been travelling here for the game. And so we had to consider it from the perspective of guidance that we have from the European Centre for Disease Control and from the World Health Organization on mass gatherings. And in light of that guidance and in light of the uncertainty surrounding the situation in Italy, we felt that the only prudent recommendation we could make was that these games be postponed the weekend after next.
And what about, you know, you can imagine there was, I think, 5,000 Italians expected to come for this match. Some of them will most likely, having booked and paid for hotels and all that, come anyway to do a bit of shopping or whatever. Are there any, you know, arrangements being made to deal with the potential threat of large numbers of people coming from these zones that we know that this virus is active in?
So first and foremost, there are large numbers of people coming from these areas every day, and particularly from Italy. The key part of our strategy, so we're in what we call a phase of containment at the moment, and a key part of the containment phase is ensuring that people have the necessary information to make decisions as it applies to them. So yes, we will be significantly ramping up the amount of information that's being provided to travellers arriving at Dublin Airport and at the other ports and airports over the coming days. Yes, many people will who are planning to come for the match may well still come, but I guess it's important to reiterate that the decisions or the recommendations we made today were specifically in the context of a mass gathering of people at a stadium. And so, yes, people may well still come. And if they do come, we're not placing restrictions on anybody coming from any country. But what we do want to ensure is if they do come to Ireland, they know what to do in the event that they themselves have symptoms. And I want to take this opportunity tonight, if there are people listening who've come back from these affected regions within the past 14 days, if you have symptoms, please, in the first instance, self-isolate and call your GP and they'll risk assess you. Please do not turn up at an accident emergency department. Do not turn up at a GP practice because obviously that risks spreading whatever it is you're suffering from on to others.
You say there, obviously, the IRFU or that rugby match was going to be an obvious mass gathering. But what's the baseline for a mass gathering? Like, how many people would have to be gathering for it to be considered a mass gathering that could cause potential risk?
So the decision we took today was based on the information we have around the specific situation in Italy and the specific context of the games that were proposed to go ahead the weekend after next. What we are also doing is we're establishing a subgroup to look at evidence-based criteria that will be applied to other large events. And as part of that, part of that thinking will be around the question that you've asked, which is what constitutes a mass gathering. And what we want to do is to use guidance that we have from the European Centre for Disease Control and the WHO to come up with clear criteria so that organisers of similar large events can apply that to their event and know what's appropriate as the situation evolves over the coming weeks.
I suppose a lot of people will be thinking and remembering back to the foot and mouth crisis, St Patrick's Day parades cancelled, the Cheltenham cancelled. Are we potentially looking down the road at those type of events being threatened by this?
So I think it's too early to speculate on that just at the moment, but clearly the situation is evolving rapidly. And as I say, this subgroup will need to look at the criteria around events like that over the coming weeks. I suppose I'd reiterate again that we're in a phase of containment at the moment. And so all of the decisions we're taking and all of the actions we're taking are really centred on identifying cases if and when we have them and ensuring and minimising spread of those cases. So ensuring insofar as is possible that we don't have onward community transmission. I think it's also very important to state that we won't be surprised if we have a case in Ireland at this point. Clearly there's cases popping up around Europe and the ECDC themselves have come out in their latest risk assessment and said that the likelihood of instances like of what we're seeing in Italy happening elsewhere in Europe is now moderate to high. So if we do have cases, that's not an indication that our approach at the moment has failed, but it reiterates the need for all of the actions that we're taking around ensuring that where those cases arise, that the spread beyond the index case is minimised in as so far as is possible.
Well, can I ask you about that? Because obviously there's been a lot of media reports today about all those students that were off on their midterm breaks in various parts of northern Italy where this has become an issue. We had our colleagues on Drive Time had a story of students who had been students from the Presentation College in Bray. They had returned from a trip to Lombardy. One parent told Drive Time that they contacted the HSE. The HSE, first of all, didn't seem to know that Lombardy was one of the affected regions, could offer no specific advice. And when they asked could their son be tested, because their son had mild flu symptoms, they were told that they weren't in a position to test their son because there weren't enough testing kits to test everyone coming back from northern Italy.
So clearly I can't comment on the specifics of that case, but what I can say is that we have tested 90 people so far in Ireland and we haven't had a confirmed case. We do not have an issue at present around testing capacity. The advice stands as it does tonight. So if you've come back from these affected regions and if you've got symptoms, then you need to self-isolate, contact your GP and you'll be risk assessed. And if necessary, following that risk assessment, you will be tested. So obviously I don't know the details of the case you're referring to, but if someone has come back from, whether it's a school child or anybody else, if they've come back from one of these affected regions in Italy, if they've got symptoms such as cough, fever, shortness of breath, they should self-isolate and talk to their GP. On the other hand, if they've come back from these regions, and I think this is a very important point, if they've come back from these regions and they're well, they can continue to go to school, they can continue to go to work. They do not need to take any further measures. But what I would suggest that an excellent place for them to go to get more advice and more information is the hse.ie website, which is updating daily with more information as it becomes available on this situation.
And in terms of, because I mean, there is a lot of people getting increasingly worried now because Italy does seem quite close to home, and the fact that we have, you know, there's Irish people in Tenerife involved in that with that outbreak there, or, you know, potentially in the location of it. Do we have a roadmap here? Do we have sufficient facilities here to handle a serious outbreak?
So in the first instance, again, we're in containment phase. So that's about isolating cases and containing it and ensuring that there's as little onward spread as possible. If any country in Europe, including Ireland, gets to a stage where there's ongoing community transmission, then clearly we will, as a global community, have moved to a new phase, to a pandemic, and we'll need to consider other measures at that point. And that will stress health systems across the world, not just in Ireland, but there are many steps down the line at this stage. And again, I think it's important to emphasise, because we don't want to panic people. There's an awful lot of talk about this at the moment. We haven't had a case here yet. It is likely that we will have cases, but all of our hospitals have prepared those teams in place. All of our hospitals have identified isolation facilities in place, so that if and when someone does present and they're subsequently confirmed with coronavirus or COVID-19, that they will be dealt with in the most appropriate manner, both for them and for the community at large, ensuring that this isn't spread onwards.
And it's important, yeah, for that message to go out, that there are plans in place to deal with this should it actually emerge in our population.
Absolutely. I think, again, unfortunately, this is just the latest in a series of similar such public health scenarios that we've had to deal with over the past 20 years. So we've dealt with SARS in 2002, 2003, the pandemic influenza in 2009. We've had Ebola, we've had the MERS-CoV, which is another coronavirus. So over the years, we've had to put protocols and plans in place around all of these. And indeed, we've been updating and activating many of those again over the past 6 weeks. So we didn't start from a blank page with this. And I suppose the last few weeks has been about refining our approach. And we will need to continue to refine that approach, as I say, as more information becomes available.
And as a group, are you going to continue meeting on an ongoing basis? What are the plans in terms of your monitoring of this situation now?
Absolutely. So within the HSC, its crisis management team is meeting twice weekly on this. And then the National Public Health Emergency Team, which is chaired by the Chief Medical Officer, meets every Tuesday afternoon and more frequently if necessary. So we met on Sunday night, and again, we've met today. And as I say, it's at least weekly, and we'll meet as necessary depending on developments over the coming weeks.
Okay, Dr. Ronan Glenn, thank you for joining me with that update and that, I suppose, reassurance. But I suppose on one level, no, saying the obvious, that is the most likely now we are facing into some cases being confirmed here. Matt Carthy, you're coughing a lot. Have you a temperature?
I have something caught in my throat all day. I have a cough, but I have noticed that people have been reluctant to move close to me. Just in relation to all of that, and without, I think it's important that none of us sensationalise, and whatever measures that the experts feel are needed and required, then we all have an obligation to adhere to them. I am a little bit concerned about the apparent lack of consultation with, for example, the IRFU in relation to the rugby game. It would seem bizarre that, a minister would make a statement relating to something like that, but prior to having a full engagement and consultation with the organisation.
But sure, what consultation do you need if your experts have decided there's a public health emergency and you can't allow a mass gathering to go ahead? There isn't much consultation required.
Well, I think in the first instance, you sit down with the organisation and you let them know that the decision has been made and the basis on which the decision has been made. And I think you heard there that there doesn't appear to be a set criteria. This was a decision that was taken on an arbitrary set of circumstances. Likewise, we're recommending that people contact their GPs. I wonder what consultation was undertaken with GPs across the country. I know in many parts of my own constituency, GPs are really overstretched as it is. And I think this goes to the crux of the scenario whereby we have confirmed cases at any stage in this country, the capacity of our health services. We know that generally speaking, when we have, just the general influenza outbreaks, that our services stretch to the limit, and we know of all the horror stories that we hear on an annual basis.
But what about that line where you were saying that they're considering and looking at criteria for mass gatherings? Should you be reconsidering your mass gatherings and your coming up in relation to this?
Our public, well, if the health authorities tell us that there's a public safety issue in relation to our any public meetings or any other event that we organise, then absolutely we'll take them on board. But for the moment, I think most of the people who are attending our events are hale and hearty and are
we'll get back to those events later in the programme. Jim O'Callaghan, you're former very quite handy rugby player, I think it's fair to say.
Thanks very much.
we just got a text in there. Typical IRFU arrogance, says Charles in Dublin 12. What do you think?
I think Matt has a point there. Obviously, this is a major public health issue, and it's really concerning that it's now, we've seen outbreaks in northern Italy. There have been 11 people who have died of the coronavirus there. We have to take the advice of the experts. However, I would have thought the minister could have just informed the IRFU before he made the statement at 6 o'clock that it's his intention to recommend that the match be cancelled. Like, the minister can't cancel the match. All he can do is recommend that it be cancelled. That's a decision for the IRFU and the Six Nations, and I'm sure that they will put the health interests of the Irish public and indeed the European public first. But there are some real issues there in terms of the people coming from Italy. I know Dr. Glenn seemed to be suggesting that it's the mass gatherings that are the major issue of concern. But that's something new. It appears that people who've been contracting this virus can get it from not attending mass gatherings from other events as well. So I think we need to put the health of the Irish public and the European public and indeed the world public at the top of all our consideration. But I do think it's a valid point that the minister could have contacted the IRFU in advance, even to tell them that, by the way, I'm recommending now that this match is going to be cancelled.
But what about, like, what's the legal scenario? Say somebody does contract it or has showing the symptoms and refuses to self-isolate or self-quarantine, whatever the term might be. Do we have any legal standing to force somebody to
quarantine? There must be powers under a health act to introduce emergency measures when there is a pandemic, and I'm sure those powers are available to the minister. But nobody is using any forceful powers here. Nobody is stating to the Italians that they can't come here. Obviously, we retain the power to stop flights, to restrict access in on the basis of a public health concern, to prevent people from leaving the country if needs be. But like, we haven't got to that stage yet. We're at a containment phase. But this is having a significant impact on the public. It's going to have a significant impact on our economy. You know, we need people who have clear vision as to how we're going to ensure that the public is protected from this and our economy is maintained. But this is going to dominate the next number of months in terms of economy and politics on this island, I'd say.
Yeah, I just see a tweet here. The Irish approach to COVID-19 is very inadequate. Cancel flights to Italy. Tell the IRFU to stuff it. Get doctors and experts who concentrate on public health rather than the economy. It's frightening. Pippa, what's your sense of how we are approaching this?
Well, I think to now, because we haven't had any cases here, which is, you know, great so far, but I think in all likelihood, from what I can gather, we are more than likely going to have cases here. You know, we just have to, I suppose, trust our Department of Health, and we have to trust the HSE and trust the advice they're getting from the World Health Organization in relation to this. I mean, we heard from the doctor you interviewed that, you know, there is no issue with, you know, testing capacity. So there is a little bit of maybe misinformation going around out there. I did also read about some school in Monaghan that apparently the children came back infected and they were not away last week at all. So, it does get a bit sensationalised, and in a way that takes from the seriousness of it, which is unfortunate. You know, I'd be concerned myself. I mean, I have teenage children and they haven't been away last week, but, you know, maybe some of their friends have been, you know, so you would have to, and there is an incubation period, of course, you know, so it's all fine coming back healthy and well from maybe an area that's been affected, but, you know.
I'm just looking at the text coming into us after that interview. Coronavirus, take temperatures at all airports, boys who initially were not quarantined. Another one, I doubt if any Irish person believes that we have the facilities to deal with a serious outbreak here. They can try to reassure us all they like, but we don't believe it, says Brian in Clondalkin. And then if that match goes ahead, says Kevin, it should be played behind closed doors. Lise, what's your sense of this? Would you go to Italy in the morning if you got a freebie?
If I got a freebie, principles wouldn't allow me. But No, I'd be pretty hesitant. Well, I mean, certainly northern Italy. I mean, I'd be pretty slow to fly into somewhere like Milan. I mean, Rome, fine. I mean, but Milan, I would genuinely probably think twice about it. And, you know, I've noticed quite a lot of chat online from people who've been flying back and forth from Italy, remarking on the fact that there's been no temperature taking in Dublin Airport on arrivals. You know, it wasn't really an issue, obviously, when this was really confined to the Far East and China in particular, because there were no direct flights. But, I mean, there's, you know, dozens of flights from Italy into Irish airports. And it does strike me, maybe, as a little bit laissez-faire that people aren't being, you know, Simon Harris tonight on the news was saying that they were going to have more personnel in the airport handing out advice leaflets. Well, I'd rather kind of see medical personnel armed with thermometers, to be absolutely honest with you, because, you know, it seems to me that everyone's striving to sort of strike a balance between, you know, keeping the Irish show on the road, you know, keeping the place open for business.
Which surely is fair enough.
And the absolutely legitimate thing is, but it's a very delicate balance. And I just, you know, I just wonder if they're just being slightly over, you know, or not...
Erring on the side of...
They're just erring on the side of actually been too laissez-faire. So, you know, again, and I think, you know, if you look, I think that the 2-week incubation period is a big deal here because, okay. You know, we've had people, you know, we've had the outbreak in Tenerife. But I mean, how many, I mean, unfortunately, it's just come at the end of midterm when loads of Irish people were probably, you know.
I have to say, I had no idea so many Irish students went skiing for the February midterm. But
I know, yeah, that was a shock to me. But, you know, so you've had kind of traffic of people coming in and, you know, back from midterm at the end of the week, just when cases were beginning to, you know, proliferate in Europe. So, yeah, I mean, it is slightly worrying, I think. You know?
Well, what about to you? Yeah. I mean, there's huge numbers of people, presumably a lot of foreign students in TU as well, is there?
Yeah, I mean, there hasn't been anything in TU Dublin about anything yet. I guess I assume there something will happen. One of the interesting quotes I saw was from Mark Lipsitch in Harvard, who said the likely outcome, I thought this was really interesting, the likely outcome is that it will not be containable, that 40 to 70% of the global population will get this. I thought that was quite remarkable, the idea that it's...
40 to 70% of the entire global population will get
because
coronavirus.
This is according to this professor in Harvard. It seems to be because it's a relatively low mortality rate and it seems to be something that people have. The incubation period is relatively large. I think from a government perspective, it's quite interesting because it's perhaps another test of competence of this government. We've probably been relatively good at keeping these sorts of things out. I mean, the H1N1, there were soap dispensers scattered all around the country. We remember BSE. I remember I was in transition year and we didn't do anything that year. So obviously the government is generally very good at this, but it's another test for this particular government of competence of how they
and
can
it's an, we're in an unusual situation, of course, because we have not
a bit distracted caretaker government.
We've
basically
got a caretaker government.
Well, I suppose Dr. Glenn said to you, Katie, as well, when you asked him are there plans in place, he said they are. But, you know, I think the minister needs to tell the Irish public what are the plans if it is the case that we do have an outbreak of it in this country. Because, like, people are concerned about it, they're genuine in their concern, and the public need to be apprised as to what the government and what the public needs to do if there is an outbreak of it here.
Okay. Well, let's move on because obviously the political story and the talks about government formation continue at a glacial pace. Today, Micheál Martin and Leo Varadkar met for exploratory talks, and here was Micheál Martin speaking after that meeting.
This afternoon, I met with the Taoiseach. And again, I said to the Taoiseach that we have formed our negotiating team, that we have a mandate to engage with his party and with the Greens, with Independents, Soft Dems and others. Today's meeting was a preliminary meeting with the Taoiseach. It's fair to say the Taoiseach reiterated the Fine Gael position, that they want to go into opposition, and that we can now see the so-called left-wing alliance that was trumpeted over a week ago hasn't really made any progress. And very, very unlikely scenario in terms of any combination on the far left.
So it was Micheál Martin. Leo Varadkar didn't speak at all after that meeting, but did put out a statement saying that Fine Gael continues to prepare for opposition. We did go to considerable lengths to get a Fine Gael representative to join us in studio tonight, but unfortunately none was available. We do have our Fianna Fáil representative here. But Jim, you're not on the negotiating team. What's the story there?
I don't know. We've 37 very talented Fianna Fáil TDs. It's not for me to select the negotiating team.
But and sure, you have the experience from 2016.
Oh, it was a great honour to be on the negotiating team in 2016. But sure, listen, it's like a match. Just because you're selected in one match doesn't mean you're going to be selected for the next match. So that's a matter for Micheál Martin. We have a very good team of negotiators. They've been given a mandate, as Micheál said, to talk to the Social Democrats, the Greens and Independents, and indeed Fine Gael. It's a difficult and different position to what happened in 2016. Like in 2016, it became fairly apparent after about a week or so that there was really only one path to a government, one or two paths to a government. That's not clear now. Like in 2016, we had 44 seats, Fine Gael had 50, Sinn Féin had 23. Sinn Féin said they weren't going to take part in talks then. And then it became very clear it's either going to be Fianna Fáil and Independents, or Fine Gael and Independents, because we'd ruled out a Fianna Fáil, Fine Gael coalition. So there was an advantage to that in 2016. Now it's more complicated. I'm not making any value judgment about it. It's just more complicated. It's more fragmented, the Dáil, and it's obviously more difficult. But I do think it's important. Like, we're 2.5 weeks out since the election. I think it's important that certainly by the next week or so, we get some clarity if there's going to be a government formed as to what type of government it will be, so as we can get to deal with the real issues, which are the people who are on housing lists, people who have rental issues, people who just need to get a new change of policy when it comes to housing, when it comes to health, and when it comes to climate change. And that's the really important issue, rather than the personalities involved.
But is it that complicated, really? Because if Fianna Fáil and Micheál Martin really could not have been clearer on it in the Dáil the other night, have absolutely set their face against any arrangement with Sinn Féin, there really is very little opportunity, as far as I can see it. Even if you get those rural independents on board, if you get the Greens on board, you're still going to be very short of a stable majority.
Well, no matter what way you look at it, as I said, it's complicated. For instance, if you go down the Sinn Féin route and you have Sinn Féin and Solidarity and Sock Dems and Labour and Greens, you get to 66, and then there are 8 left-wing independents. That gets you up to around 74. So, you know, you're talking then there's 13 independents, rural and regional. Like, I think whoever is elected Taoiseach, they're not going to get probably 80 votes, being frank. They're going to get elected on the basis of a couple of people are going to abstain, as happened with Enda Kenny. If you look at it the other way, maybe with Fianna Fáil and the Greens and Social Democrats and Labour, you get to 61, 13 independents brings it up to 74. So I suppose part of the reason why people's concentration is on Fianna Fáil, Fine Gael, Greens is because that gets you to, I think it is, 82. So, but it's complicated. It's difficult. But I do think that, like, I think the Taoiseach hasn't really been helpful. I'm not accusing him of playing games, but he could be accused of playing games. Like, he's indicated he's having exploratory talks as a last recourse. He may look at government, going into government, but that they want to be in opposition. That the country does need a government, and we need a pathway to a government fairly promptly. And I think it's incumbent upon everyone to play their role.
But I mean, from the face of it, certainly with that statement from Leo Varadkar this evening, it definitely the dynamic seems to be that Micheál Martin wants to be Taoiseach, wants to go in with Fine Gael, sees it as the only way in, and Leo Varadkar is basically playing hard to get.
Well, Micheál Martin wants to be Taoiseach. We all want him to be Taoiseach. I think he'd make an excellent Taoiseach. In terms of what he has said there today, he said his party have given him and the negotiating team a mandate to engage with the Greens, Social Democrats, Independents and Fine Gael. Like, we will work on that to try and form a government. But I think the Taoiseach needs to recognise that he has a responsibility too, and he can't just sit back and, like a knight in white shining armour, come in at the end of the day to save the country from a second election. Like, I think people need to be frank as to what they will and what they won't do at an early stage.
Pippa, you were in a meeting for, was it 7 hours?
Yeah, well, yesterday and today between yesterday and today we started our series of exploratory talks. We said we would do it before before the general election, and it's something we were actively doing now. So yeah, we had I suppose was it 7 hours, Matt? Didn't feel like it, did it? Sandwiches and tea in between, but listen, it was as I said, it was the very sort of start of anything. very, you know, we were really based around our manifestos, other policy issues. It was amicable, it was respectful, it was, and, you know, it's just a start to see where commonalities lie, where differences lie. And tomorrow we're actually, we're meeting with Fianna Fáil for tomorrow and half of, what day are we on today? Thursday. And then I think Fine Gael early next week. And again, it's still open to the Social Democrats and other parties. So, you know, I would feel we will get through this series of engaging with all the different political parties. You know, we want to just be strong on this. You know, our main issue, obviously housing and health are important, but the climate and the biodiversity emergency has to filter through that. And that's really our, you know, our primary goal.
So after all those hours, I mean, did you come to some sense that, okay, we're all on the same page on this, this and this, but we have a huge issue with that? I mean, are you at that stage?
I mean, look, even if you look at the manifestos, there are similarities in, you know, our, some of our housing policies. There are similar, you know, similarities in other issues. So, you know, there it was on the whole. I mean, we didn't really get into real nitty gritty. You know, we didn't hit any brick walls because it was still very much exploratory. So,
but if you were to call it, Pippa, mm-hmm. where do you think this will land in terms of the overall government formation negotiations?
I actually don't know, because I have looked at the sums and it all does come down to the numbers, and you need a bit of security in the numbers as well. You know, I mean, you could have Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil with the 9 regional independents, but I mean, that's, you know, how stable that would be. I very much would doubt it would be. I think anyone who chooses to go into government is going to want obviously what they want out of it. And I know from the Greens, if we do end up in that situation, it's going to have to be absolutely very strong on those issues that are crucial to us.
Do you think we will get a government out of this?
I hope we do. I do hope we do. But I don't know. I don't really know. I at this moment in time, just hearing from what's coming out of Fine Gael and even what's coming out of Fianna Fáil, you know, without either of those two, it's going to be pretty difficult, I think. Yeah.
Matt. We were here last week. Are we further away any closer to any arrangement being put together?
Well, I don't know. From our perspective, we're doing exactly what we said we would do. We're talking to all those who are willing to talk to us. I think the format of the engagement with the Greens was a good one. We broke into workshops, for want of a better term, where relevant spokespersons and others engaged on the key issues: housing, health, climate, biodiversity. We also talked about the future of Europe, Brexit, big constitutional change on our own island, and you know, I found the engagements really really constructive. And for the most part, I think what we were identifying was the areas where we clearly agree, because I think that's the first part of any negotiations, and where there were questions or potential variances, we've agreed to exchange papers and to come back again for another round of discussions this evening. We made further contact with most of the independents to try and get to a substantive phase of negotiations with those, because we had some good constructive conversations.
Have you
last
given
week.
Up on Fianna Fáil or Fine Gael, rule you out from it, but have you totally given up on either of those two parties now actually coming back to the table?
Well, what we have said is we will be willing to talk to anybody, and that's not to say or assume that we will strike a deal with anybody or be able in a position to reach agreement. But we believe that there is an onus on us to live up to our commitments and our responsibilities.
No, I'm not talking about your commitments and your responsibilities. I'm saying in terms of your read of what you're hearing.
Well, as you say, Micheál Martin made his position crystal clear. I think that position is hugely unpopular within a huge swathe of the Fianna Fáil support base, certainly if...
But nevertheless, it's his position.
It's his position for now. So let's see. Our position is the same as it has been before the election, during the election and after the election. We will negotiate with anybody. We are serious about delivering a government that implements real change on the issues that the people require.
OK, we'll go back to the rallies in a moment. Lise.
It's a mess. You know, opinions seem to remain entrenched on every side. You have Fine Gael, who are just, you know, lying low, had a sort of releasing passive aggressive statement saying, you know, well, we had the talks and we, you know, encouraged Fianna Fáil to go off and engage with other parties. You've got a lot of busyness going on. I mean, I noticed Micheál Lehane from your parish was reporting this evening that the regional group, which is one of the myriad technical groups that has formed.
Yeah, this is
in
the group that has Dennis Nocton as the convener.
This is Dennis Nocton, yes, and it has Sean Canny and Michael Lowry, Padraig Tobin, Verona Murphy, Noel Grealish, Cathal Berry, Peter Fitzpatrick, Matt Shannon, I think that's it. So they're now urging, they said they've sat down and they've talked with Fine Gael and with Fianna Fáil. They can see very few policy differences between any of them and they should all get together. And they're kind of putting themselves forward as maybe potential partners. Now, mm-hmm. each of those will arrive with a shopping list of their own constituency-wise as well. So, you know, every way which way you look at this, it's fraught with difficulties. Even if you manage to put together something, you know, people still seem to sort of, you know, don't sort of seem to underestimate the difficulties presented by, say, you know, presented to all the main parties then who have to go to their own grassroots members and push through, you know, get permission.
But particularly in circumstances where there doesn't seem to be an ounce of preparatory work being done by anyone to prepare the ground for a seismic change in policy in terms of going into coalition with.
Well, you see, this is it. And I mean, when, you know, you have these positions been taken by the parliamentary party, you know, that goes down to the grassroots and it entrenches views yeah. down there as well. So, you know, it really, it looks incredibly difficult. I mean, I really...
If you were a betting woman.
Well, I am, usually.
what price? So I what mean, have you, yeah, what price what have you got odds, in a second election?
I have to say, I mean, if... Put it this way, I think if we didn't have maybe, you know, say the coronavirus, which might, present an economic difficulty and a difficulty, plus also Brexit is now roaring back into life as well.
I'm just reading a tweet here. It's only a matter of time before Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil are using the coronavirus as an excuse for their grand coalition.
Well, I mean,
it seems they seem to fear Sinn Féin more than this virus.
Well, I was actually going to say, I mean, you might see a whole, you know, a government of unity. Maybe they'd all get together and just say, right, let's just all pitch in until this is over. But, you know, I put it this way. I think they were much more leisurely about it the last time in 2016 because though you know, there weren't hugely pressing issues at the time. Unfortunately, you know, in 2016, Brexit was still a gleam in the eye of David Cameron.
It seems to be pretty leisurely. We're 17 days out and we're still talking about having.
Oh, I mean, like still, absolutely, still. I mean, yeah. the talking is just. You know, yeah. it's still, I mean, it's literally talking and lots of busyness, but, you know, not a lot of progress.
Kevin.
Yeah, I mean, there are clearly major constraints here. All the parties recognise that coalitions lose votes. The most successful coalition in Irish history was the 1997-2002, a period in which Ireland grew by 8% on average per annum, an enormously successful period. And yet the coalition then, the Fianna Fáil PD1, only grew in terms of its vote share by 1.5%. Normally, coalitions lose votes on, you know, somewhere between 5 and 20%. So the two parties that go in will know that their vote share overall will squeeze and the third party that stays out obviously will benefit. The second problem we have here is the membership constraints. Obviously, by a majority in pretty much every party, and then the Greens, which have a 2/3 majority requirement to actually go into coalition, it's the membership that actually pays the most for the cost of coalition because the members include councillors, activists, lots of people. So they're the ones who actually are going to get the squeeze. So I don't think we're going to find a coalition in the short term at all. In fact, when people talk about the grand coalition, normally a grand coalition is between government and a substantial amount of the opposition to prevent any advantage for the opposition. The grand coalition people are talking about here is Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael, which isn't the government, really. They would have to include Fianna Fáil, Fine Gael and Sinn Féin to be, technically speaking, a grand coalition, like the way you find this in other European countries. So there are two types of parliamentary model. There's the Westminster model, where typically parties just get, say, the 80 seats that's required to get into government. And there's the consensus model, which is typical in PR systems, where it's not just, you don't just get to 80, you add on a couple of other parties so that, you know, when you get together, it isn't always the case that everyone has to always agree. So the kind of model that if we were to look to at some point is, I think, as Bertie Ahern mentioned in an RT show recently, would involve to some extent the three parties having some level of cooperation, whether they're all in government or whether there's two parties outside or whatever it is. I know the Danish example, they have a number of parties inside and outside of government, all cooperating depending on what bill gets presented and what bill doesn't. So that's potentially a way forward. Otherwise, I think we're going to be here for a long time as all the parties try to want to be the party outside government and take full advantage of the possibility of being in government with a supermajority at some point in the future.
Jim O'Callaghan, what about that idea that you really, if we really are going to find some way forward, that there has to be some role for three three big parties?
Kevin's point was, I suppose, that in terms of Fianna Fáil, people are trying to stay out of government. Fianna Fáil is trying to go into government. Like Fine Gael is trying to stay out of government. That's clear. Sinn Féin say they want to go into government. And I don't know whether that'll happen, but I have my doubts about that. I think the rallies indicate that Sinn Féin's preference is probably to be in opposition as well. So the only one of the three medium-sized parties, in my opinion, that wants to go into government is Fianna Fáil. But in terms of where it goes from here, all we can do is talk to the people who we said we would talk to and try to negotiate it. But, you know, it's like asking somebody to dance. If they don't want to dance, there's nothing we can do about it.
Well, it sounds a bit like a kind of a Lanigan's Ball proposition, doesn't it? You know, that Kevin was putting here, you know, with parties stepping in and stepping out again, you know, according to the legislation.
Well, I think what Kevin is suggesting is that if you have two parties in, the other party abstains or supports in support of particular policies. Yeah, is that
what frequently happens is you often have a centrist party somewhere in the centre of government and using, in some issues, the party to the left of it will agree, and in some issues, the party to the right of it will agree, and on various.
And the other party will agree to abstain.
And sometimes another party might come in.
That sounds like a confidence and supply, with, just using this as an example, would say Fianna Fáil being the party in government, and on some issues Sinn Féin would support it from opposition, and on other issues Fine Gael would support it from opposition. Like maybe Matt can speak for himself. I don't think that's something that Sinn Féin would agree to, and I don't know what will be the response of Fine Gael. But
Pippa, you studied a lot of other coalition arrangements. I heard you talking about this before.
I think if we were to go back to another general election, I think that would be a failure, to be quite honest, because the people have put, you know, the parties in place as they are, and the independents and so forth, and it really is up to the politicians to make that work best. Now you look at Finland, I think at the moment, or quite recently, they formed a government out of five parties, you know, so it almost is that model, probably all, as you say, maybe not even a confidence and supply, but, and that's sort of the politics we've moved towards. You know, we have moved away from two big parties, and now we've sort of three, and I'll include us, three and a half medium-sized parties now, you know, so that could be the way it's going to go. And if it's going to continue in that guise, we're going to have to form a bigger, grander coalition of a whole rainbow, you know.
Okay, well, Jim, you mentioned those Sinn Féin public meetings. We just have, I think, a clip of Piers Doherty addressing the people who were outside Liberty Hall at the Sinn Féin meeting this evening because there wasn't enough room inside the hall to accommodate them.
We need to give voice to the change that people want. That is what we're about. That is what you're about. That is why you have come out here. Unfortunately, we can't accommodate everybody, but your show here tonight has sent a clear signal to Micheál Martin and Leo Varadkar that no amount of billion of tactics, no amount of aggressive words will ever persuade the people of Ireland.
Jim O'Callaghan saying there that he doesn't really believe that you really want to be in government, that these public meetings are an indication that you're actually more comfortable in opposition.
No, these public meetings are about asserting our wish to be in government, not just for the sake of it and not to be part of just some cosy consensus political deal shabbled together. We want to get into government to implement and deliver the type of policies that we think this country needs. We want to resolve the housing crisis, so we want to have the most ambitious house building programme in the history of the state. We want to tackle the health crisis head on. We want to move towards a united Ireland. We want a government that's going to actually put in place the building blocks to deliver.
Okay, but how will public meetings get you closer to that?
Well, the first in the first instance, public meetings are about engaging with the public. We organise public meetings all the time. They don't usually get the turnouts that we've got the last couple of nights. And actually, I think Leo and Micheál played a big part in mobilising
people for them
because I know we have a public meeting in Cavan next Monday night, and we haven't even got round to publicising it yet, and I'm getting phone calls. Where is it? And what time is it at?
Public meetings are highly unusual in the space between an election and the formation of a government. And public meetings of this nature and the tenor and the tone of these meetings very much feel like electioneering again, and that you're back on the road.
One of the things that we pride ourselves in Sinn Féin is public engagement. So I know when I was first elected to the European Parliament, I organised public meetings very early on to talk about what we had campaigned on and how we plan to implement that at a European level, and how we plan to work on that
this public
at
the
European
level.
We've done the same in the North
the rhetoric after
were seismic changes, whether it be immediately after
the
restoration.
But Matt Carthy,
the
rhetoric that is coming out of these meetings is it's to put pressure on Leo Varadkar, Micheál Martin, to accept that you can't be locked out of government, that this is the
I think those people. So we're organising these meetings, as I say, there's nothing unusual about that. I think one of the reasons people are attending the meetings in such large numbers is to say that they voted for change. It wasn't a protest vote. It can't be just dismissed as some people attempted to do. And I think, as I said, the hysterics that some of our political opponents went to try and, dismiss public meetings as being, bullying or intimidation or anything like that. I think I think any of the political journalists who attended, were put clearly on the record that the meetings were about political engagement.
Okay.
And I think it's something that we should all be welcoming, the fact that thousands of people are taking it upon themselves to engage in the political process.
I have to take a very short break, but I want to put that to you, Jim O'Callaghan, after these.
The Late Debate with Katie Hannan on RTE Radio 1.
And you're welcome back. We're getting a big reaction to this discussion. Would another election constitute a mass gathering, says one texter. The Dáil should meet an emergency session on Friday or Saturday. There is an emergency health risk on our doorsteps, says another. Put all 160 of them into lockdown until they have agreed on a government. This move by Sinn Féin is very dangerous to hold the public meetings. They want protests on the streets, says Mike. And Katie, ask them why Mr. Varadkar and Mr. Martin did not do the same as Mr. Howland. If that happened, I think it would speed up the process, says Kevin. If I could just ask you this before we go to the rallies question, Jim O'Callaghan. I mean, this is, any political observer would have to say, Micheál Martin's last throw of the dice.
I disagree with that. He's been a very effective leader of Fianna Fáil since he took over in 2011. We had a very successful election in 2016. There's no doubt about it. This election was disappointing for us. But Micheál Martin has the full support of the Fianna Fáil Parliamentary Party, and we want to see him as Taoiseach.
Can you ask Jim O'Callaghan, this is another texter, why Fianna Fáil thinks it can lead the next government after such an awful performance in the general election? 37 seats after 10 years in opposition, says Sean in Meath.
Well, I suppose we are the biggest party by way of seats. I know we've the same now as Sinn Féin, 37. But listen, no party is going to be in a situation where they're going to be like before, where you have a lead party with 60, 70, 80 seats as it was in the past. Can I just come back to the point Matt was making about the meetings? Because there is a contradiction at the heart of what Sinn Féin are saying. On one level, they're saying that we want to get rid of Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael. This is the election for change. And at the other side, they're saying, in fact, well, Fianna Fáil aren't allowing us in to talk to them, and that's undemocratic and that's unfair. So they can't have it both ways, going into the rallies and getting people excited about that they're going to get rid of Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael, and at the same time coming into studios complaining about the fact that Fianna Fáil
There are two different situations, though, surely. One is Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael going into an arrangement, locking out Sinn Féin and the parties of the left from the government, and the other is facilitating Sinn Féin and government along with Fianna Fáil, which would include Fianna Fáil policies.
Mick Barry turned up at the meeting last night. Lise was there, and he said he had given his support in the Dáil to Mary Lou MacDonald as Taoiseach on the basis that there was no engagement.
But that's the people before profit solidarity position.
I know, yeah. But that is they got a commitment. They gave a commitment that they would support Mary Lou MacDonald for Taoiseach, provided that there weren't talks with Fianna Fáil. So they can't have it both ways.
No, I'm confused. We're confused. Are you not confusing two two things here. What Sinn Féin is saying versus what people for profit.
No, Sinn Féin is saying two things.
Yeah. They're saying,
on one level, they're saying that we don't want to have, we want to get rid of Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael. They've destroyed Ireland for the past 100 years. That's the narrative.
Mm-hmm.
And on the other side, they're saying, actually, we want to get into government with either Fianna Fáil or Fine Gael.
No.
There's a contradiction.
Okay, Matt, just clarify that.
Yes, we think government comprising of Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael would be really bad. The reason we think that is based on the evidence of the past 4 years of your collaboration together. We've seen the evidence in terms of housing, health. On the other hand, we want to be in government, and we want that government to be a stable government that implements the types of changes that are required. We recognise that in order to do that, we need to talk to other parties. At the moment, your party is simply saying, we won't talk to you. And, you know, rather than concentrating on what Sinn Féin or Solidarity People Before Profit, I think, Jim, you, and more importantly, Micheál Martin, would be better served actually talking to Fianna Fáil. Those remains of Fianna Fáil voters and support bases across the country, because they're telling me that they're Fianna Fáil supporters all their lives, and they're telling me that they're really, really, really angry with the attitude that Micheál Martin has been taking.
But in fairness, I think Micheál Martin and myself have a better understanding of Fianna Fáil voters.
There's no evidence of
Fianna Fáil members than you.
There's no evidence of that whatsoever.
Like,
well, I'm only telling you what they're
like
telling me.
It would be like me saying to you here, Matt, listen, I know better than you know about Sinn Féin members
I'm
or Sinn Féin voters.
I'm only telling you what Fianna Fáil supporters in counties like Monaghan are telling me. And I think
I've a better insight into what Fianna Fáil voters are saying. Better insight into what Fianna Fáil members are saying.
What are Fianna Fáil members saying, actually?
Are they looking forward to going into government with Fianna Gael?
They're saying that we gave a commitment prior to the election that we wouldn't go into government with Sinn Féin, and they say that it's not credible for us to turn around now and to change that. They're saying that they want to see Fianna Fáil in government. They recognise the difficulty of these numbers. They're disappointed by the results in the general election.
But what are they saying about your commitment before the election that you wouldn't put Fine Gael back in government?
They recognise that was a commitment we gave, yeah. And they recognise that we're now in a difficult position. That's what they recognise.
So they're willing to accept a switch in policy on that issue, but not on the Sinn Féin issue.
They will have the final say on that. Fianna Fáil members will have the final say on that. So it won't be dictated to them by me. It won't be dictated to them by Micheál Martin. They will have the final say at an Ardèche if that is put before them.
But doesn't every party turn to its leadership, its leaders, to guide them in terms of where they should go?
I know, but
this.
We also need to recognise that this is just not about individuals and parties. It's about a programme for government. And like all the time we're talking about individuals and parties. We need to see what is this programme for government for change that the people want. And if that is credible, people in Fianna Fáil will support it.
Okay, Kevin. The rallies are not rallies. Are we calling them rallies?
Meetings.
Are there public meetings?
Meetings?
The public meetings. We won't call them rallies. We'll call them public meetings.
Yeah.
You know, surely every political party is entitled to hold a public meeting any time it wants.
Well, it obviously can. After an election, it would be relatively unusual to do so. I think there is an aspect of this that has quite strong tones of populism. Just one quote from Mary Lou McDonald was about it being obvious the political establishment are struggling with the result of the election, and also referring to the idea of a people's government. I know some people may not think about populism and might sound that they're just advocating popular policies, but actually populism is a little bit more complicated than that. Populism is essentially about nullifying criticism from all the institutions of liberal democracy. That's the existing parties, the media, experts, the judiciary. It's an approach that's advocated by lots of political parties. And it's worth highlighting because increasingly, as populism starts to get bigger and bigger, the institutions that are allowed to criticise the populist party get smaller and smaller and are pushed outside on what's reasonable. So it revolves around this idea of this pure people versus the elite. And it's something that Cass Muda, lots of academics have acknowledged and understood to be a very successful strategy by political parties in Italy, in Hungary. And it's something just to highlight in relation to the establishment of rallies, which essentially are about trying to leverage the people, I guess the pure people in some sense, against the elite and against the establishment.
I think that's really unfair, Kevin, I have to say.
There has been a lot. I mean, if you look online, I have noticed in the last couple of weeks a lot of hostility towards journalists who are just merely reporting what various parties and individuals are saying. And there's massive pylons. And, oh, you would say that, and you just want to keep Sinn Féin out. And there is definitely a tone out there that I don't hear being shut down by Sinn Féin.
Well, let me put on the record that people shouldn't be acting in inappropriate or aggressive forms on online or anywhere else. And I've been the brunt of aggressive social media trolls and all the rest. And I know some people have been targeted.
So you don't think the media are being unfair to Sinn Féin?
I think there has been times when, yes, I felt that some analysis was unfair. Like, I think that Kevin's analysis right there was unfair, because if you look at Sinn Féin, the secret to our success, in my view, it was because we actually set out in very detailed terms our policy platforms.
Okay, Matt, I'm going to be very unfair and shut you down now, because I've been told I have to take one last short break.
The Late Debate with Katie Hannan on RTE Radio 1.
And we're actually already over time, so I'll just very quickly thank my panel for coming into us on this very cold night. I want to thank the production team and hand over to Colm Murray now on Late Date.